Trust and Will is an online estate planning service. Visit trustandwill.com for details.
Ooh, Trust and Will.
My dad and I were always close, but some things we just didn't talk about, like his will. After he was gone, we found out he didn't have one, and it created a lot of stress during a time of grief.
Creating a will can be hard to think about, but avoiding it can lead to greater difficulty for the people you love. That's why Trust and Will makes estate planning simple. Create a will online in as little as 30 minutes.
Now, I have a will in place to make sure my loved ones are protected. With Trust and Will, it was easy and affordable. And I got peace of mind knowing my wishes are clear.
Trust and Will.
Get 20% off when you visit trustandwill.com/future. That's trustandwill.com/future to get 20% off. trustandwill.com/future.
You're tuned into SEC Sunday Night, part of the Chief Sports Network.
Hit the lights. It is SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network, proudly presented by Hewitt Domodiros Law, hdlawsc.com. We are a family here at SEC Sunday Night, and they want to be a part of your family as well. If you need a personal injury attorney, if you have an insurance claim, if you just need an attorney in general, tens of millions of dollars have been won for their clients, and they're right in the heart of South Carolina, covering across the state. So that's Hewitt Domodiros Law, hdlawsc.com. When you talk to Brad and Dean, they're going to get to know you, and you tell them that we sent you right here on SEC Sunday Night. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We have a national championship game. We have no SEC representative. It is basketball season officially in the SEC. Oh, yeah, and there's also this thing called the transfer portal. We're going to get to all of that stuff tonight. But first and foremost, boys, Craig, Casey, how's it going? How are we doing here? My first show of 2026, so happy New Year, boys. I'm excited to be here, and I got the portal behind me. We're going to see who's in and out.
You know,
I got a question before you start, Craig. Did you see how Rob did the open? That's how it's supposed to be done. I was surprised. I didn't see it like that last week, but
it was smooth. Last week was the smoothest intro. There was no mute problems.
Let's just say we're glad to have Rob back this week.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, back to the portal.
How was recruiting for Shane last week? Did you go big game hunting for the Gamecocks?
Yeah, we were able to secure a few targets, as you can see over the course of the week. Shane Beamer has done okay in the transfer portal this week. Yep. A lot of guys coming in. We'll talk to you about Nitro and see what we think, as he is formerly a speed racer of Athens. And we'll get to all that portal stuff. But yeah, had a great week last week. Thank you to both of you for covering for me as I was on location and doing a little bit of work last week. So I couldn't do it without you, boys. It's good to have the band back together, though.
Let's not do that again, Rob. All right.
Yeah, seriously. and if we do, hey Casey, there's a reason you're the producer and I'm the I have the face for YouTube and Twitter.
All right, we'll do it that way.
Right, look. Every time I'm out and you guys host without me, the show does incredible numbers. We did fantastic numbers last week, and the last time I was out was the middle of the summer, and Courtney was on, and you guys did great numbers that night too. So record breaking numbers that night, which we have since, of course, broken again, but still. Just pushing it, pushing the envelope at all times. That's how we operate.
You got us started, so we'll see you later, so we can go have another record Sunday night wrap.
Where's John Tweet Sports at? Where's John Smith?
Yeah, that's the reason. Let's be honest. Everyone wants to see John. They heard about the tailgate.
Okay, what's going on? What's new? How are we feeling?
Not great.
What did you guys do this week?
Why don't you feel great?
Because for the third time in a row, we have no SEC team. And then we're going to get another damn Big Ten champion. And it's going to be Indiana. I feel like we're stuck in a portal. Or what was that show, Loki? We're like in another... What was he in, another realm or something? I don't know, some sort of sci-fi show. My wife was into that. But where are we in a world where Indiana is the most dominant football team? It's cool. It's great. But it's weird. It is absolutely weird.
Yeah. Go ahead, Casey.
I was just going to say, it's definitely weird. And Miami preseason, or maybe even a couple weeks into the season, they were touted as the best team top to bottom, and then of course they pulled to Miami and lost games they probably shouldn't have, but come to find out that they are actually doing all right. Their defense is didn't get a lot, I know we'll break it down probably a little bit later, but didn't get a ton of pressure to Trinidad Chambliss, but still made plays when they had to. And the offense, I mean, Carson Beck, game manager, baby. He just hands it right to Mark Fletcher, or left to number six. You know,
or right through the hands of an old missed defender on multiple occasions. You know, whatever.
He threw his pick, like Craig called it. But in Indiana, I'm seeing a lot of my friends, Miami fans, that are saying that they're doing something a little bit, I don't know, questionable. How could they possibly get a pick six on the first play of the game? Like, they knew it was coming. Kind of reminded me of that Miami pick six a couple weeks ago, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Did you see after the game, I guess Oregon found the kid and they gave him the ball that he intercepted.
Cool. Yeah.
I thought that was cool. At least Oregon did something right that day. Sorry to our good friend Emily Taylor.
I was pulling for the Ducks, but I picked the Hoosiers. Craig's I was wrong moment of the week is that he went with Oregon. We had a busy week, starting off with me being gone last weekend, and we honestly, to kind of pull back the curtain a little bit, I feel like communicated less this week than we have in maybe 6 months, Craig. I don't know.
But are we fighting?
We did communicate enough. I'm absolutely not. I missed you. I missed you a ton. But what we did communicate on, and kudos to you for making sure that we got this in while we were on the phone, I think maybe at the airport as I was getting ready to jump onto the plane. Not off. is you asked me for my picks. So I'm glad you did that so I could point out that you were wrong. Because
I was wrong.
You picked Oregon, and that was a long one. But we were both wrong about the other game, which we will get to here in just a moment. But before any of that,
mm-hmm.
we've got boards to talk about. And that's how we want to kick off tonight. Is MBG has provided us with fantastic material, as he does every week. And so we want to use this to kind of start off some talking points. Casey, get out your readers. It's time for It Just Means More, genius.
All right, we're going to start off at University of Georgia. MBG says, Hannah Cavender costs Georgia the 2026 national championship. Our friend Kirby's pleats says, Hannah Cavender cost us the 2026 natty. Kirby couldn't compete. So is it her fault, guys? What do you think?
First of all, Kirby's pleats is a fantastic handle.
Yeah, that's excellent.
Can we just sit with that for a second? Kirby's pleats. Does this guy go back and forth with Kirby's hairpiece? Like, are they complimentary? What about Kirby's polo?
That's his burner.
Right.
What, Kirby's visor?
Like, let's put all of this. Let's put all these guys together. That sounds like an elite team. No, she did not cost Georgia the 2026 national championship game. I do believe that Carson Beck is more talented and had more in the tank than Craig ever did.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Don't. Oh, I thought you were comparing Carson Beck as a quarterback to myself. And I'm like, no shit, Sherlock.
No, I think that what I was saying was that I had more belief than you ever did.
I wasn't wrong about Carson Beck. So go ahead and I want you to go ahead. But go ahead and you tell me how I was wrong about a guy who was 1-for-9 in the third quarter until that last drive. And thank God his receivers are athletic and he can throw a tunnel screen. So yeah, go ahead and tell me about how the great Carson Beck is.
No, Craig, I think that when it comes to these types of moments, who would you say it, let's start here. Let's rank the four quarterbacks that were in the semifinals.
Okay.
So you go ahead. I'll let you tee it up in order. How would you rank those quarterbacks?
I'm going to go number one, Dino Nuggets and Mac and Cheese, Fernando Mendoza.
Okay.
Number two is Trinidad Chambliss.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yep. Number three is Dante Moore.
Okay.
And number four is Hannah Cavender.
Okay, yeah. That's exactly what I expected you to say. So Trinidad Chambliss, who you ranked two spots ahead of Carson Beck, yep, who we have seen be magical and do incredible things. Now, let's back up a little bit. Who do you believe on the season, Mr. Georgia Dog, had the better defense, the one that was calling Athens?
Trust and Will is an online estate planning service. Visit trustandwill.com for details.
Ooh, Trust and Will.
My dad and I were always close, but some things we just didn't talk about, like his will. After he was gone, we found out he didn't have one, and it created a lot of stress during a time of grief.
Creating a will can be hard to think about, but avoiding it can lead to greater difficulty for the people you love. That's why Trust and Will makes estate planning simple. Create a will online in as little as 30 minutes.
Now, I have a will in place to make sure my loved ones are protected. With Trust and Will, it was easy and affordable, and I got peace of mind knowing my wishes are clear.
Trust and Will.
Get 20% off when you visit trustandwill.com/future. That's trustandwill.com/future to get 20% off. trustandwill.com/future.
His home or the one in Coral Gables?
Coral Gables.
And why would you say that?
Because they're still playing and my dogs can make enough stops to beat Miami.
Okay.
Is that fair?
It is. But you pushed back on me a few weeks ago about Miami speed, and I said that it was going to be a factor, and their defensive speed was going to be something that played into the game against Texas A&M. And then I said it again against Ohio State. And even though we both picked Ohio State, I said, watch out for the speed of this defense. My point is, Trinidad Chambliss carves Georgia with a masterful performance, right? Mm-hmm. Both sides, both Stockton and the offense for Georgia, Chambliss and the offense for Ole Miss, they played incredible, incredible football. And coming out of that game, we would have probably put our money on Chambliss. I would have, even over Heisman Trophy winning Fernando Mendoza, because it was just this attention-grabbing, incredible Sugar Bowl where he was dropping it in the bucket. Now, he lacked some accuracy against Miami. Why is that? Was the coverage tighter? Was the pressure more? Was the game pressure turned
up? Lacy was hurt. So Lacy had the 70-plus yard touchdown, in which he looked like he tweaked his hammy and was in a leg compression the rest of the game. Yes, he ran the ball still, but at no point was there a threat that Lacy was going to break something big. So I think that hurt Chambliss a little bit.
Sure.
Miami was hurt on the back end, though, so I don't know if the coverage was better.
Chambliss
didn't even play.
Chambliss did not play to the standard that he played against Georgia. And yet here we have a very tight game.
If Ole Miss could make a stop, Chambliss would be in the national championship. That last drive of where they went ahead was masterful. And here's the thing.
If Georgia could have made a stop, they would have played Miami. Like, we can go back and forth about this.
If the aunt had nuts, she'd be my uncle.
I love that quote. But here's the – so with Miami, Miami won despite themselves. How many times did I text you to run the damn ball, Dawson, and yet they continued to throw? And I was talking to my buddy, and I –
Carson Beck's fault.
Yes, it is.
No, because it's not.
He's not calling it. He has to read it. But here's the thing with Shannon Dawson. I understand that all of those plays, you have a read for a run, and then you could have a throw. Miami can gash Ole Miss's, defensive line, their front seven. They could have run the ball. With that 3.5, 4 minutes left, they should have been running the ball. Maybe they could have got the field goal. Maybe they went with the touchdown. The tunnel screen was super effective. You know, but you have Beck throwing what? Almost two picks on that last drive, and it just looks horrendous. So, and also, please, in the national narrative, in the national media, let's not talk about how Carson Beck all of a sudden enjoys football now and that he had such a hard time at Georgia. Homeboy was driving a Lambo, tore his UCL or whatever something in his elbow, totally ghosted the team until they played in the Sugar Bowl, and then he went and put his name in the NFL draft, and when he didn't get a high enough pick, he's like, oh, I'm going to go to the portal. So I don't want to hear this stuff about Carson Beck and what a great story it is and how he had a tear in his eye because he just loves football. Yeah, he only loves $4 million.
And Hannah Cavender.
No, not anymore because he screwed that one up too. He fumbled that one.
A sister though?
Yeah, but she's engaged to a Dallas Cowboy.
Oh, so he can't go there.
He can't go there. Nope.
I think his best bet is actually go back to Hannah. Okay, next one because we're getting nowhere with this discussion.
Are we just not getting where you want to go with it?
No, we're not getting anywhere with the fact that Carson Beck's in the national championship and Georgia's at home, but you still think that he's garbage. All right, Casey, take it away.
This is my favorite type of message board post ever, by the way. MBG says, could this Indiana team be the greatest in CFB history? For some reason, I can't scroll up, so I'm just going to read what I can. Our friend Colin McMahon. What a boring name, Colin.
Can
you do something about that? Yeah, like in a true headshot. Come on. Haven't seen many people talking about this, but if IU wins the national championship, it has a serious argument to be the greatest college football team of all time by at least one measure. That's because no college team has ever finished 16-0 before. Yes, it's thinking into the future, but it's interesting to realize how much of an opportunity this team has. Now, this was also posted well before, like two rounds ago, I believe. So it wasn't just this weekend. So is IU football the greatest team in the ultraverse?
Okay,
so remind you of the Patriots. Hey, Rob, remember when the Patriots were undefeated and then all of a sudden lost in the Super Bowl?
Hey, that's not cool because right now the Patriots are they're about to start their playoff game tonight. So I'm not really thinking about 2007 at Eli Manning or any of that stuff right now. So thanks for putting that forefront of my mind, Craig. It's fantastic. No, what we're talking about right now is our good friend Daily Joy because she is the greatest crusader for defending 2019 LSU as the greatest college football team of all time.
I thought she was defending 2026 LSU. That's all I see on the Twitter, I thought.
And so I just went ahead and I went ahead and tagged her to make sure she's tuned in because every time I've seen this argument, she has been the number one defender. She's been the number one crusader. She's been the number one argument fight starter. Come on now. As we can laugh all we want to, this is not the greatest football team of all time. We don't seriously think that.
What other team won 16-0?
Do people really think that, Craig?
What about the first 15-0 team? Could they be the best team?
They're pretty good.
They were pretty good. 2018 Clemson Tigers.
They were pretty good.
They beat the greatest team of all time, the 2018 Alabama. Leading up to the game, that's what everyone was saying. I gave Mike Golic Jr. crap about it but he didn't remember conveniently enough.
He was too busy eating a Pop-Tart.
He was too busy saying the next year's national championship was the greatest team of all time. Like recency bias, right?
Go ahead. There's the point. We can do this every year. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, but it's Bloomington, Indiana. Like, I mean, let's be honest. Like, look at what Lane's doing. He just opens his door and he can get players. You know, like Cignetti has to like hack into some system in order to be this good.
What about Tebow at Florida? What about Liner and Bush? What about Vince Young? There's so many options here. What about the last Miami team that won it?
What about the South Carolina team?
Oh wait, never mind. Bad example.
Why are we having this conversation?
You're on the Chiefs Sports Network.
And I'm catching these strays. I don't understand. That's just
even I wasn't going there, Rob. I wasn't.
What about 2022 Georgia? 2021. Yeah, I
mean, sure.
I'm moving on.
And I'm okay with the LSU thing too.
Yeah.
But how will we ever know?
get him to play.
Anyway, yeah. MBG says, poor little old Alabama just can't compete with the likes of Indiana and Ole Miss. This is our friend Jimmy John's. Love your sandwiches, pal. Until we somehow scrounge up Indiana and Ole Miss type of money, I just don't know how we can compete with these juggernauts for talent. Huh. Yep. So do you feel bad for Alabama? I kind of do.
No, but I think there's truth. Like, I think Alabama is struggling in the NIL space, and I don't know how Alabama is struggling in the NIL space. Like, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around. Aaron Suttles left The Athletic a few years ago to go to the collective Yay Alabama. It seems like they would have that set foundation, but it doesn't seem like they have that infrastructure in place. And this, again, is why I made the argument a few weeks ago, and I also made the argument last week with John Tweet Sports, of why Ole Miss was a better job than LSU. It's because of the Grow Collective and the way that they're able to put that together. Indiana's done a great job because they have Mark Cuban. So it's, you know, really about those big funders and those people of, like, where you need to be. But do I feel bad for Alabama? No. Sorry.
All right.
I do have a late addition to the undefeated best team ever. It's Suwannee football from 18-19. Just FYI. They got to be in the conversation if we're doing it.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. I agree with you.
That came from our friend Fast Chad gave me that one. So I just
want to say Fast Chad's legit.
We probably shouldn't leave out Suwannee. That's a good idea.
We're talking message boards. You can't talk message boards without Fast Chad.
Fantastic. Love that guy.
All right.
Yeah. I don't feel bad for Alabama. It's amazing that everything.
Trust and Will is an online estate planning service. Visit trustandwill.com for details.
Ooh, Trust and Will.
My dad and I were always close, but some things we just didn't talk about, like his will. After he was gone, we found out he didn't have one, and it created a lot of stress during a time of grief.
Creating a will can be hard to think about, but avoiding it can lead to greater difficulty for the people you love. That's why Trust and Will makes estate planning simple. Create a will online in as little as 30 minutes.
Now, I have a will in place to make sure my loved ones are protected. With Trust and Will, it was easy and affordable, and I got peace of mind knowing my wishes are clear.
Trust and Will.
Get 20% off when you visit trustandwill.com/future. That's trustandwill.com/future to get 20% off. trustandwill.com/future.
Everything's cyclical, right? So everybody catches up to everybody, and we've heard that. And when you're in the throes of a dynasty, if you will, and I'll use air quotes there, but if you're in the middle of it, you feel like it's never going to end. But when it does end, then you're like looking for reasons as to why it's ending, you know. For Alabama, it's no more money.
Yeah. Is this why Saban retired? Did he know, because of the NIL, because of the portal, knowing he didn't have the control, knowing that there were going to be more variables than what he was used to? That's why Biden goes to the ESPN. The dog thinks so.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
I would say absolutely why. I mean, I know he's never come out and said it, but isn't that he didn't want to play the game? I don't blame him for an older guy.
Did he not want to play the game, or did he know that Alabama couldn't play the game to its fullest?
So then he was not going to be the GOAT when Kurt Cignetti comes in and is now the greatest coach ever lived in the Midwest. And
if he's at Texas, where they have the money, allegedly $40 million this year, which I don't buy, but you know, I saw that number on the internet, so it has to be true. No one has 40, but what I'm saying is, Texas has more money than Alabama. Does Saban stick around at Texas because he has more of a chance to compete with good old Kirk Cignetti, or does he dip as well?
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of change happening, and when you have dominated a space and literally everything changes, it makes a clean break, and it's time to pass the torch. And I think that he was able to see that. I think that he still has more wisdom than anybody that we have access to hear their voice when it comes to this game, not just between the lines, but outside of the lines as well. And so he's still a valuable voice, and he's still the GOAT. And I don't think it should be held against him that he stepped away when he did. And I think that's the tilt of that argument a lot of times, is that people are like, oh, well, he was only good because, like, give me a break.
No.
Give me a break.
No. There's a reason why all those coaches that got fired went to hang out with him, too.
Yeah.
This
all right.
Why Saban was good.
This is unbelievable. One of our favorite message boards. If I personally have one, it's probably the SEC Rant. Our friend Jack Traven. Looks like he's got a little Georgia G next to it. MBG says, whatever happened to just giving kid 10,000 in a McDonald's bag? His title is, I think I'm done with CFB. Dear Diary, I think I'm over college football. I'm a mid-tier booster at UGA. Spent more than I probably should have since I graduated and watched football every Saturday for 30 years. Some of you may have seen my melts. LOL. What has me at the I don't give a shite point is our first string RB threatening to go to Ohio State. Individually, I don't really care about his decision, but this system is so broken. I would just love to go back to giving guys 10,000 in a McDonald's bag. Rant over. I was hearing like this Jack Handy music in the back of my head here while I was saying that. So sorry for the melodramatics.
No, that was exactly what we needed.
What's a mid-tier booster? How much are you giving for a mid-tier booster?
About 10, 15 bucks.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I want to know how he's I really want to know how Georgia would define mid-tier booster. I want to know what this guy is giving so that we can quantify what he defines.
He's giving him a McDonald's bag. He's like, hey, I supersized it. You can have the bag now to put the 10K in.
Yeah.
I signed up for a $5 thing because my school did this whole like season in review for baseball,
yeah,
which is my personal favorite thing ever. It was $5 a month. And so I'm considered a purple member now or something because I technically gave 60 bucks.
Woo!
So I would consider myself a mid-tier booster.
Yeah, there you go. That's it.
And I terminated that deal after the year.
Craig, low-tier boosters you're posting on the message board. Mid-tier, you're giving $5 a month.
Do you have any thoughts on that running back movement before we move on to guests and whatnot?
Who is it? Who is it?
That's Nate Frazier.
It's Nate Frazier.
Frazier's not going anywhere. Frazier's staying.
Did they sign him?
What level of confidence do we have on that, Craig?
102%.
On a scale of 1 to 105 miles an hour, how confident are you?
I think I see flashing lights in my background.
That's a fantastic scale. Okay, it is 8:24 here on SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network. We are proudly presented by Hewitt Domodaros Law. And here's a few more words about those guys. We'll be right back in just a moment with some more talk about the college football playoff.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete recovering from injury or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt Diamaduros Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt Diamaduros, we're on your team!
OTC is go.
Thank you. Go.
PTC is go.
LPS is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot off.
FTM is go.
Safety comms is go.
FTU is go.
LRD is go.
FRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
It's SEC Sunday Night, presented by Hewitt Diamaduros. visit hdlawsc.com. It's go time.
Welcome back to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network. We are back here to discuss the college football playoff as we kind of got into it just a little bit a few moments ago, Craig. Only one SEC team remained in the semifinals, and now there are none as Ole Miss was defeated by Miami. Indiana absolutely obliterated Oregon, and now we have the Hoosiers and the Canes in the national championship game. It's a little bit disgusting from our perspective, but pure dominance from Indiana. There's not really much that you can say or take away from those guys. You know, and as much as we joke around here, we do love to we do love to hate on our friends outside of the SEC and elevate the league that we believe is the best. But We can put our bias to the side as pure and great journalists that we may be at times, and recognize, right, Indiana's being really dominant right now, and we don't want to take anything away from them. We see what they're doing. It continues to take off. It continues to elevate. It continues to be impressive time after time. We've tried to maybe take away from them, not just us, but I say we collectively as the media. The story is just incredible. The story is absolutely phenomenal, and it's been fun to see. As we look at
– hang on, I got one thing. Jay Will is on his way. He just beamed me up from the other ship. We talked about this a little bit last week. I want to get your perspective.
Okay.
While you were out portaling with Beamer. We asked the question because it sounds fun. Like, because all our friends, even though we're respected journalists, a lot of folks in the Big Ten and the Big 12 and the ACC are singing "Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead."
Can we call it the ACC? Can we call it?
Can we call it the AC?
I'm totally fine with calling it the AC. Can we make this decision while Casey's not here, and then whenever we see him again, if he's back tonight or next week or whatever,
we just
call it the AC.
Yeah, I want to call it the AC from now on. But like,
Trust and Will is an online estate planning service. Visit trustandwill.com for details.
Ooh, Justin Real.
My dad and I were always close, but some things we just didn't talk about, like his will. After he was gone, we found out he didn't have one, and it created a lot of stress during a time of grief.
Creating a will can be hard to think about, but avoiding it can lead to greater difficulty for the people you love. That's why Trust and Will makes estate planning simple. Create a will online in as little as 30 minutes.
Now, I have a will in place to make sure my loved ones are protected. With Trust and Will, it was easy and affordable. And I got peace of mind knowing my wishes are clear.
Trust and Will.
Get 20% off when you visit trustandwill.com/future. That's trustandwill.com/future to get 20% off. trustandwill.com/future.
You know, greatest lacrosse conference out there. Take all that, right. Ivy League.
Got it.
But like, it's a fun narrative. Oh, the SEC sucks. They got five teams in. They got nobody in the championship. Is the Big Ten better?
No.
Why not?
They're top heavy. Here's the deal about the SEC. The SEC got more teams in because the SEC is a deeper league.
But what about the 2-7 bowl record, my friend?
You of all people know the answer to that question.
I'm playing the excellent journalist. I'm not.
I appreciate it, but we are not evaluating anybody's season based on their bowl game, unless it was a college football playoff game. Teams are not fielding their true rosters. Mm-hmm. They're not fielding their true staff, even in the college football playoff, that was representative of their season in these bowl games. Bowl games are important to that team's individual fan base and that program's development for next year. That's it. It is fun for the fans to travel. It's fun to get one more opportunity. We only get 12 chances to see these teams play, right? Yep. As fans, if you're a fan of one individual team, you get 12 opportunities to watch that team play. And so if they play in a bowl game, you better believe that fans are going to go and see them play in that game. But it is not representative of the team. So you can give me the 2-7 bowl record or whatever it is for the SEC, all that we want to. That is not representative of the strength nor the depth of the conference, because those games are not representative of the team that played the regular season.
Yep.
So toss that. And then you talk about the college football playoff. There were 5 teams in. I do believe that the top end of the SEC has come down because of the portal and NIL, and talent has been spread out. That's why you see 5 teams getting in. But if we look at the league as a whole, and you want to make an argument about which is the best conference, I'm still riding with the SEC, because if we look at the Big Ten, you got a couple of teams there at the top, but there is a ledge that it drops off.
I agree.
To get to the rest of the Big Ten, where I would call the SEC more of a gradual descent that you could actually walk down. Jonathan is here. Yep. The doctor is in, as you would say. Jay Will is with us, fresh off of a trip to the Fiesta Bowl. And so we want to get your thoughts here as we're talking about the SEC and, you know, the arguments out there that it's fallen off. First of all, my friend, how are you? How have been your travels over the past few weeks? I know that you guys have been keeping the road pretty hot and hitting up a lot of games.
Yeah, playoff season has been fun for us travel-wise. You know, we got to go out to College Station for the Texas A&M-Miami game. Brooks and Christian had the opportunity to be at the Sugar Bowl. And then we turned right back around and we're out at the Fiesta Bowl. And then also Brooks and Christian hit the Peach Bowl as well. So, yeah, been a busy week for our network, but a fun time of the year for sure. You know, soak up as much college football as you can when it gets down to these last couple of weeks, because we know how much the offseason sucks. You know, when college football isn't here, we miss it a lot. So, yeah, definitely took that in. Great trip in Arizona. The only thing that I've noticed is that whenever I go out to the West or in that area, it seems to rain. You know, like Arizona, not known for a place that gets a whole lot of rain. Los Angeles, not known for a place that gets a whole lot of rain. Both times I've been out to those places, it's decided to rain. I think it was warmer here in the state of Georgia at one point in time than it was out there in Arizona. So for some reason, the West Coast weather, not a fan of mine. But yeah, it was a great time. Had a good time out there and a great football game as well.
Did you figure out in your analysis what the hell happened to Texas A&M when you were at Kyle Field? Or are you just trying to forget that? Are you trying to forget that?
I mean, for Texas A&M, I think it boiled down to a couple of things. You know, they were a very explosive passing attack throughout the season. And for someone that was at that game and was in College Station that weekend, that wind was whipping all day long. I mean, if you were to look out at the flags from the press box during that game, there wasn't a moment or time where that flag like wasn't almost directly parallel with the ground, because that's how strong the wind was for the entirety of the game. And I don't know if that was really portrayed on TV all that much, but I think you could kind of pick up on it enough considering how many missed kicks there were during that game. But I think that played a role. And when that's happening, it's going to tilt towards the team that has a stronger run game. And what we've seen from Miami throughout both of these playoff games and all 3 of their playoff games is they have a really strong rushing attack, and it's because they have big guys up front and they'll outlast anybody else in that department. Texas A&M had a very up and down run game. I know that Le'Veon Moss wasn't 100% healthy going into the postseason. And so I just think they kind of got outmatched there. And that's ultimately what that game boiled down to.
Yeah. No, Fletcher has been unreal for Miami. It's been just fun to watch him. It feels like he's getting 4 or 5 yards at least every time he touches the ball. Might, you know, maybe take a note of that, Shannon Dawson, as you game plan for your national championship game.
No doubt.
Jonathan, as you look at this, the run over the course of the playoffs, I want to hear a little bit about that Fiesta Bowl environment. Here's one of the things that sticks out to me. You look at the teams that are out there in Arizona, and then you look at the teams that were back here at the Peach Bowl in Georgia, and if we'd flip-flop the locations, you probably would have had a little better fan turnout, but you tell me, what did it look like as far as people traveling to get there? Geographically, it would have worked if you would have flipped the locations, but it's a college football playoff, and we had teams in these games that haven't really been in this spot in a long time or ever. So I imagine that impacted the turnout a little bit too.
No, yeah, I completely agree with you. I agree with you on the stance of probably should have flip-flopped the teams and the venues. I think that would have made complete sense of – hey, Indiana and Oregon, you guys travel out to Arizona, Miami, and Ole Miss, you guys get to go to Atlanta. That would have made complete sense. But also to your point as well, Ole Miss and Miami, not two teams that are very familiar with playing in the college football playoff and certainly not familiar with playing in a game to go to a national title. So you can make all the excuses you want. I feel like fan bases should have shown up. Number one, Ole Miss's fan base did show up. They showed up for the Sugar Bowl, and then they turned right back around and they showed up for the Fiesta Bowl. Now, Miami was much better represented than Oregon was down there in Atlanta. I would say that the Oregon-Indiana game was like an 80-20 split. I would probably say over there in the Fiesta Bowl is 60-40 in favor of Ole Miss. But not only did Ole Miss fans outnumber Miami fans, they were much louder throughout the entire game. I mean, from pregame until the final whistle, that Ole Miss fans had more juice than anybody else in that building. So they showed up for their team. They did a great job of bringing a great environment there. You know, I had a unique viewpoint of this game because while I was credentialed for this game, I was not actually in the press box. I was up above the press box, and I guess what they were calling the auxiliary box. So I'm literally sitting in the stands with like a little table sitting in front of me, so I can hear everything. I get to take in the entire environment, and Ole Miss fans, they brought it the entire game. So hate that someone had to lose that game because it was such a great football game, but their fans did everything that they could to make sure that they came out on top.
Yeah, a good friend of the show, interim alumni, Alex, went out there with his girlfriend. They had a great time out there in the Fiesta Bowl. You know, like I said, hats off to Ole Miss. Like I said, they filled up the Sugar Bowl. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a big advantage. And again, I think that is the cool part of NIL and the transfer portal. When people are, you know, when grandpa or grandma are upset at the dinner table and, you know, complaining about it, it's cool what Ole Miss is doing. It's cool what Indiana is doing. I mean, all of these teams, they have a transfer quarterback, and probably greater than 50% of their roster is made up of starters, is made up of transfers. It's just the way college football is, and that's how you are going to win.
Right.
Jonathan, if you could point to one big thing that stood out to you in terms of what the major issue was for Ole Miss. You know, we talked a little bit about the injury to Kewon Lacy, obviously. Hindered them on the offensive side of the ball. Defensively, it seemed to me like they needed to just shore up their tackling a little bit. I don't know if they underestimated Miami or if it was just a case of them not being able to get guys on the ground. Yeah. But there were opportunities where there was for Miami back, especially for Fletcher, where it was second chance efforts and breaking through the first couple of arm tackles that really gave some extra yards and kept those drives moving. If just from an analysis standpoint, does anything stick out to you as like this is the major key that if this thing would have changed, Ole Miss would be preparing for a national championship right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that because going into the Georgia-Ole Miss matchup, that was something that we talked about all week, was one thing that Ole Miss has to do a really good job of is tackling in the secondary, because you know what Georgia likes to do in the passing game. They're going to try and get it to Zachariah Branch rather quickly. They want to attack that screen game, and everything else kind of opens up off of that. And Ole Miss did a fantastic job tackling in the secondary in that department. I mean, they really didn't let Zachariah Branch get loose but a couple times, maybe, and a couple times is a win. So it was kind of the same analysis going into this next game, and it was something that Ole Miss really didn't do great throughout the regular season. It's why I thought that Georgia was kind of heavily favored going into that Sugar Bowl matchup, and it kind of showed its ugly head against Miami. When you got a guy like Malachi Toney, especially, very similar and akin to Zachariah Branch, they want to get that guy the ball now and let him go to work. And when he did, he produced big results and had a clutch touchdown for them late in the game. So I think that was the issue, the tackling in the secondary. And then I think with how Miami plays football, you know, they're sustaining drives throughout the game. And, you know, one of those drives that they sustained, it ended in an interception down in Ole Miss's end. And, yeah, that sucks to turn the ball over in a game like that. But at the end of the day, it was still 13 plays or it was still 12 plays, whatever it was. And they just wear you down, man. I mean, just drive after drive after drive. It may not be putting points on the board. It may not be a touchdown or anything like that. And it may be a punt. But that punt might come after 8 plays. And you've been on the field for 5 minutes before you even know it. And by the fourth quarter comes around, Mark Fletcher and those offensive linemen, they're ready to come after you. And so I think that showed up. You know, Miami had to go down the field and get a touchdown, and they did so. And they left with almost no time left on the clock, although Ole Miss was able to get a last-chance opportunity to get in the end zone. But that's just what Miami does, man. They're going to chunk it and chunk it and chunk it. They dominate time of possession, and they got big bodies up front that are going to wear you down.
Question for you. You and I both know this guy very well. Carson Beck is the quarterback of Miami. Yeah. Rob knows that there's no love lost between Carson Beck and I. He will not be getting a Christmas card from me. I won't be getting one from him. So Is it fair to say he seems like he's almost regressed? He's made a handful of good plays, but I feel like Miami has had to hide him and has won in spite of Carson. I mean, I don't see – you and I both saw a guy with a big arm at Georgia, you know. And again, that cost him with interceptions. But the downfield passing game and everything else, I mean, he almost threw the game away a couple of times in the Fiesta Bowl. What is up with Carson Beck?
So what I'll say, and you're absolutely right, Rob, and I don't, and people are going to hear that, like, especially Miami fans, they're going to hear people say of they're kind of hiding Carson Beck in this offense and they're not really having to rely on him. And they paid $4.5 million for this quarterback that they're really not using. And they're going to hear that as a slight, but let me tell you, Miami fans, if you're listening or anybody that is a fan of Carson Beck, before you come after us and you want to put your knife pointed at us, let me say this. Is that was one of Carson Beck's biggest issues in his last year at Georgia is they had to rely on him way too much because they couldn't run the ball. And on top of that, they didn't have weapons that were helping him out a whole lot. So you kind of saw a Carson Beck that was turnover prone, a Georgia offense that wasn't sustaining drives. And Carson Beck is having to go out there and rip it 40 times because Georgia can't rely on the run game. I mean, even when it comes down to the fourth quarter, we got a 2-score lead. We need a death march to seal it. Georgia could not run the ball. And, you know, maybe some of that is on Carson Beck because he doesn't add a whole lot of mobility to the offense. He doesn't keep defenses honest. But that's been very beneficial for him in this Miami offense is they have a great offensive line and they have a run game that he can benefit off of. And they can rely on that on that side of the offense. And that's great. That's the type of offense that he needs to be in. And I think you kind of saw that in 2023 with Georgia when he did have guys like Dejon Edwards and Kendall Milton who weren't necessarily world beaters by any means at running back. But Georgia was at least consistent enough in the run game in 2023 to where Carson Beck was able to be super efficient. They were able to be efficient off of play action and do all this other stuff. And they're one of the most explosive offenses in 2023. Now you fast forward to this Miami team, they got the run game going and Carson Beck can feed off of that. Carson Beck is not the type of guy that you want going out there and throwing it 45 times. If it's all on 15 or 11 shoulders today, may not be winning the game. But when you put him in this pro-style offense and you got a run game and a balanced attack off of him, he's going to be great because one thing he does great of is he gets the ball out quickly. He's going to make good decisions when he does so. And that's what Miami's doing. They're feeding into that. And it's one of the reasons why they've been one of the most efficient offenses in the playoff.
Love it.
There you have it. I mean, he said it a lot better than I could, Craig, but – just continues to make
an argument. I'm not taking your damn word for it.
That's fine. If we have to bring somebody else in, I'll be glad to queue up questions and let somebody else make excellent points for me. Okay, Jonathan, when we look at the national championship really quickly, before I move on, I got a couple portal questions. But
all right.
I'll give you an opportunity. Craig and I are going to pick it at the end of the show. But are you leaning one way or another? We haven't with you talked about this, but earlier in the show, we've given a lot of credit to Indiana for just the dominance that we were able to see against Oregon. Mm-hmm. And even as SEC guys, sometimes we want to take away from that, right? And we can make our jokes and we can let our bias come into play. But if we zoom out and look at this truly as guys who are covering the game, mm-hmm. There's nothing to take away. It's pure dominance in a lot of cases. Yeah, so what are you, if you're looking at this game, what are you seeing?
Well, on one side in Indiana, I see a team that is better prepared than any other team that gets on the football field with them. That team executes at a higher rate than anybody else. It's almost to the point where, and I know that this kind of started getting floating around a little bit on social media, it almost seems like Indiana's cheating at this point. That's kind of what it feels like. I think that they're just super prepared. I think that their scouting department is doing a top-notch job. I think that their players are more prepared than anybody else, and they're playing at such a high level to where it perceives that. To the level of, well, they got to be cheating. There's no way that they're just this much better than anybody else right now. I mean, when you get an offense that's executing as much as they are, even their offensive linemen, I mean, guys across the board know exactly where they need to be every single down, and it's shown up. So you have that on one hand, and then you have a Miami team, which I kind of just got done talking about, of their offensive line and defensive line is better than anybody else. I mean, they've been better than anybody else on this playoff field, and it's gotten them this far. So really it kind of boils down to of, if Messidor and Reuben Bain are going to be as disruptive as they were in previous games, and if that offensive line just plays as sound as they have over the past couple of games, hard to pick against Miami. But it's way harder, in my opinion, to pick against the Indiana Hoosiers right now, considering at the level of play that they have right now from their players. I mean, all 22 guys on the field right now are locked in. They know what they need to be doing. And they put belt to ass, if you will, against Oregon this past weekend for good reason. So it's going to be hard for me not to pick against the Hoosiers.
What are your thoughts? So, like, as we tie a bow on it, because, you know, that's what I do, is I have to add one more question to throw us totally off the guardrail. What are our thoughts of Dan Lanning? You know, this is Rob's favorite, like, first go after the Gamecocks when I go after his boy Dan Lanning.
Yeah.
But, I mean, his record is insane. And, like, you know, I saw something on Twitter earlier, you know, the only team he loses to is basically our teams that go to the national championship. But when our homeboy loses in the playoffs, whew, not close, not great. Yeah. I mean, are we talking James Franklin 2.0? Or what are our thoughts on Dan Lanning and his legacy?
Yeah, I mean, so going into this playoff, for me, what it is more so about is just kind of seeing if Dan Lanning could get over the first round or the first playoff game hump, and he did so. Now, granted, it was against James Madison, but he also went up and followed that up with a win over against Texas Tech. Now, however you feel against Texas Tech is what it is. You know, you get matched up who you get matched up against, but he wasn't a first-round exit this time. It wasn't a second-round exit. Like, he got to the semifinals for a chance to go play for a national title game. And, yeah, you're absolutely right, though. When this guy loses in the playoff, it's ugly. It's been brutal. It's been tough losses. Now, to your point, though, talking about James Franklin 2.0, he's done something that James Franklin hasn't done. He's done it twice. It's make the college football playoff. He's gotten to the dance, at least, and he's done it in back-to-back years. So I think that kind of what you're just seeing is, again,
he also won the conference last year. Not sorry to interrupt. But
no, you're fine.
I mean, that's another big feather in the cap.
He's upset. Look at him, Jay Will. Look at him. He's all upset over there. He's got his pouty face on.
Well, look, Dan Lanning is a great coach. Dan Lanning is a great recruiter. He does all of the great things. In fact, I think that Dan Lanning is one of the best at kind of adapting to this modern age of college football, because if you look at what he's doing on the recruiting trail, he's taken about 14 to 15 recruiting guys from high school level, and then he's plugging holes everywhere else in the transfer portal. And those 14 guys that he gets from the high school ranks, it's five stars. It's top 100 players. It's top 150 players. It's not, oh, here's a three-star from the state of California that might be cheap. Let's take him. No, he's taking dudes, and he's getting good football players. And so I think he's doing a good job of kind of adapting and doing his best with what he has over there at Oregon, which is endless amounts of whatever you – monetary value, whatever you – however you want to put it. But I think he's doing a good job of playing both sides. And, you know, maybe that's kind of playing into him getting routed in some of these playoff games, because we know what Indiana does. They get the 23-year-olds out of the transfer portal, and they put the most experienced football players on the field, and they line up and they beat the crap out of you. That's what they've done over the last 2 years, other than Notre Dame last year in the playoffs. So maybe it's kind of to a fault, but I think he's doing a good job of trying to play both sides and doing what he does best, because, I mean, this is a Kirby Smart / Nick Saban guy. He's not just going to shun himself from the recruiting ranks of high school football. So I think he's kind of doing a good job of doing both. But I think you saw him take some steps forward this year. It's just always going to be the talk of, will this be the year that Dan Lanning finally wins a national title? He's always going to have the talent to do so. It's just a matter of, can he do it over the next four games in a playoff run, or for three games straight in a playoff run? It's yet to be determined.
I think he's going to get one, for what it's worth. I called the championship against in the Big Ten last year preseason. And so Craig is right in noting my longstanding belief in Dan Lanning. I think I can just see that it was going to line up.
Basically a given. It's a given at that point.
What'd you say?
I said he's going up against James Franklin. It was basically a given he was going to win that damn game.
Well, yeah, but I called it in the preseason. We didn't know who the matchup was going to be. I just thought that the roster and the way that things were aligning for the season was going to work out, and everybody would have projected that it was going to be Ohio State. It just happened to it up until the last week when they lost to Michigan again. Right. We would have never anticipated that was how it was going to shake out. So I do think that he'll get the national championship. It's just a matter of, like you said, Jay Will, kind of making his way through that run. Right. And unfortunately, when he's been eliminated, it is more times than he would like looked like it did last week. Okay, let's move on to the portal before we get you out of here. Any thoughts here? Let's begin with Nate Frazier. We talked about it a little earlier. Casey asked, on a scale of 1 to 105 miles an hour, how confident are you that he's going to stay in Athens? Craig says 102. Craig says 102.
The lights are flashing.
What are your thoughts?
You know, I don't know if I'll put an actual number on it, because these portal things are so fluid. Like, the last wording I got is, yeah, it seems like he's going to return at Georgia, but you can't take a breath until that signature is made. And there's even been instances where a signature is made and maybe it doesn't matter a whole lot. So I will say this, it sounds like Nate Frazier is going to be playing for the Georgia Bulldogs next year. But I think that I would just say this to every college football fan of there's a whole lot more of these situations that are going on than you would like to know. That's the only way I'll put it. It's like when you hear rumblings of a player of, oh, well, they're searching more money or so-and-so's tampering with them or this, that, and the other. They haven't signed their contract. And you're like, man, whatever. That player is not loyal to the school. He can go again. It happens across the board. It is everywhere. So don't single out just one player. Like, just because it gets loud with one player doesn't mean he's the only player going through this. It's happening a lot over college football. And I think, you know, it's a detriment to the sport, but it is what it is. These players have the power and they're using the power and they should while they can. So I think that you're just seeing a case of, you know, a player trying to capitalize on an opportunity. But at the end of the day, it sounds like he'll be in Athens.
Georgia seemed to have focused a little bit primarily on the defensive side. I know they got the receiver from Tech. Is there a offensive piece in the portal that you think Kirby Smart should be looking at and should be trying to bring into Athens?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple. Obviously, with the Nate Frazier stuff going on, I'm sure that they were kind of analyzing some of the running backs that were out there that were available for them. I'm sure they were kind of tapping around there. If you hold on to your running back room, I would say that, one, you need another playmaker in the wide receiver room. Like, it's great that you got Kenyon from Georgia Tech, an ex-receiver, him and CJ Wiley can lock it up there. But I think that you need another one of those playmakers, kind of like a Zachariah Branch, not like an exact mold of him and what he did for this offense, but you need somebody that can be that type of player. They tried to get one in Trey Richardson, who ended up going to Louisville, the Vanderbilt transfer. So maybe they find another one of those. And then also, I think they're kind of awaiting decisions from some of their offensive linemen, like, is Monroe Freeling going to go to the draft? Is Ernest Green going to go to the draft? If so, if both do or even one of those go, I would assume it's pretty likely that they sign themselves a tackle out of the portal, at least to build up depth, but specifically to try and get themselves a starter out of the portal and just kind of see what they can make happen there. But, yeah, I would say offensive line is probably one of the bigger needs, depending on what happens with the decisions between Monroe Freeling and Ernest Green.
A possibility that South Carolina starting left tackle Josiah Thompson could land in Athens if some of that happens. I know that was one of the first visits that he was supposed to take after hitting the portal.
Right.
In Columbia. As you look across the league, and Jay Will, we'll get you out of here on this one. What sticks out to you as the biggest portal acquisitions that we've seen so far? Obviously, you've got some big time names, right? Cam Coleman goes into the portal, and that's the number one target for a lot of people, and he lands in Austin, to Craig's credit, with a lot of money flowing over there on the 40 acres, right? Yeah. Texas A&M has been very active as well. You had Hollywood Smothers looking like he's going to land in Tuscaloosa, and then he bounces and he's headed to College Station, to your point earlier about how fluid these things are. Chaz Coleman was a big name coming out of Penn State.
Yeah, he was.
And that has really been – yesterday it was all over the place in terms of where he was going to be. I had some inside track on some of that, and a lot of people thought that he was going to land a lot of different places, and he ends up in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And so some of these big names have not exactly been easy to follow. You know, fans definitely want to know where guys are going and want to clear track, and we do the message board segment to kick off every week, and that's kind of even more elevated right now in the quote unquote, as we head towards the quote unquote off season. This portal window has been insane. And with no second portal window upcoming, everything is really packed in here. And mm-hmm. then we're going to get more of a true off season than we've had in a long time as For we sure. go from February all the way to the start of the season, with not really a lot of movement unless we have coaches moving on to the NFL after that season finishes up. And spring ball has kind of become a thing of the past, and so I'm not really sure what we're going to get out of that either.
Right.
So back to my original question, and I've given you a moment to think. What portal acquisitions are the ones that jump off in some of these teams?
So I would probably start with Texas. I think that they got two things that they really needed. And for starters, I think it's very obvious to me that Sarkisian knows this might be a make-or-break season for him. Like, the way that they're spending money, the way that they're trying to up this roster, like, you go and get a guy like Cam Coleman and follow that up with Hollywood Smothers, They lacked in the run game this past season, and then also they needed some playmakers in the wide receiver room. They got Ryan Wingo and Cam Coleman now, so that should be enough for them. That's obviously two major additions for them. I would say maybe wherever Sam Levitt goes or wherever Dylan Raiola goes, obviously those are going to be two major additions for them as well. Like one of those guys surely is going to be going to Miami, you would think, and then the other one maybe goes to Oregon if Dante Moore decides to go to the draft. But who knows what's going to happen there with how he played this past weekend. But I would actually go down below the state of me and the Florida Gators. I think that they have done a phenomenal job in the transfer portal of Aaron Filo, a guy that probably majority of college football fans have no idea who he is. He was kind of a spot player for Georgia Tech when Haynes King was banged up and not available. But in those moments that he did play, he was really good. I mean, this guy broke passing records in one singular game for Georgia Tech earlier this year. I think he threw for like 373 passing yards, record-setting performance, all that great stuff. A guy that has been with Buster Faulkner for multiple years now. And they're adding in guys that have been with Buster Faulkner as well, other offensive weapons. And then on top of that, they bring back Jaden Baugh and they get Dallas Wilson back. I think that they've done a bang-up job so far. And I think that that could really behoove them this next season and at least kind of expedite the process for John Sumrall and those guys down there of like not making year one with him just a complete wash, which is what it looks like is going to be for Auburn and Golish down there. Like, I think it's just going to be it's year one, whatever. Let's just see if we can go 5-7 or whatever it is, like whatever their expectation is. I think that's kind of what they're doing down there. But yeah, I would say that Florida's done a great job. Texas has done a great job. And then you know the usuals. I mean, Indiana's stacking it up right now. Texas Tech is stacking it up. All those good things. So we'll see.
You know, college football blue bloods, Indiana and Texas Tech.
Yeah.
Just getting it done out there in the portal. Hey, thanks so much for being with us, Jonathan. Great insight as always. Phenomenal stuff there on Florida. And just a note for both of you, as I'm sitting here watching my Patriots, a big catch for Ladd McConkey, former Georgia Bulldog, as he gets the Chargers close to midfield, down 3-0. At the start of the second quarter. All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate you being with us. And we'll check in with you soon.
Sounds good, brothers.
All right. It's 8:57 here on SEC Sunday Night live on the Chief Sports Network. And we will hit one more break and we'll be back in just a moment to give you our best takes on the national championship game and final thoughts on the college football portal.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt Diamandouros Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt Diamandouros, we're on your team!
Oh, man! The building is on fire.
Emergencies and accidents happen. When you're in the middle of a fire or water event, all you want is for things to return to normal as soon as possible. Resto Pros of the Midlands is with you, guiding you through the process and working with you to get your home or office back in working order. They'll answer your questions, discuss procedures, and can act as your advocate when it comes to processing your insurance claim. RestoProsMidlandsSC.com. Open 24/7 when you need them. Quality that is guaranteed.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete recovering from injury or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
Yo, what's up? Baby, let's go!
This is SEC Sunday Night on the Chief Sports Network.
We'll be right back.
back to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network. I'm Rob Williams. He is Craig McMichael.
Breaking news. LSU has their quarterback. Landon Clark from Elon has committed to the LSU. It is just different. Lane is ready. Here we go. Let's go, Joy.
Now, Craig, a lot of people said that about Trinidad Chambliss as well. We could have made the same type of argument when we saw, wait a minute, Ferris State.
You defended it because you knew where Ferris State was,
and so you knew about Chambliss.
I've been to Ferris State University.
But I would just say the same thing about Lane going after a guy from Elon. You never know what he's looking at. He might have himself another guy.
Okay. What happened to Sam Leavitt? Can we talk about this for a minute?
What do you mean?
Sam Leavitt, like his dance card was full, and he's still dancing. Like, should we be nervous?
No.
Like, should he have taken the Kentucky money?
No, I think that he's waiting on Miami to figure out exactly what they're doing.
Miami or Oregon?
And I think, Portland. And that's money, right? Like, in terms of both of those schools are going to have it to throw. So, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Not that they can't host him and get him in for a visit and all those things now, but Oregon is done. So, but with Miami, you got to imagine that Mario, this is an impossible scenario, and I hate it about the calendar. And we're going to continue to hate the calendar until we work every kink out. It'll be 10, 15 years in the future, still complaining and moaning about the calendar. But can you imagine preparing for a national championship game and then being like, oh yeah, we have the biggest visit of the year happening today as well. So we need to get that locked down, or next year we're going to miss out on a big opportunity for next year. That's insane to me that you're preparing for your biggest moment in 25 years.
Yep.
And you got to host this big meeting where you got to sell.
Yep. I got a story about that for you off the air.
That sounds phenomenal. We're going to get to it in just a moment. Let me run over a couple of things really quick with basketball before we predict the national championship and look at our thoughts about the portal. A few ranked teams in the SEC going down in league play. Florida takes down Tennessee 91-67 on Saturday. Auburn 95-73 over 15th ranked Arkansas. And Texas 92-88 over 13th ranked Alabama. So there were some big upsets there in the SEC. As we look at the standings, as it is right now, Craig, do you happen to know who leads the SEC in basketball?
Athens' own Georgia Bulldogs.
That is not correct. The hottest team, the hottest program in all of the conference, the Vanderbilt Commodores.
I'm sick of Vanderbilt. Will you go away in your raised elevated stage basketball court? That's so dumb.
16-0. And also that means they're, of course, undefeated in the conference as well. So there you have it.
Did you see Alabama was trolling Texas this weekend? Here. They put UT that they weren't playing Texas, they were playing UT Austin.
Well, that's funny. That is hilarious because they lost.
Shout out to Nate Oates, former high school basketball coach in the great state of Michigan. Was a coach at Inkster High School. Unfortunately, did not have a lot of success against Texas, just like my Michigan high school quarterbacks that we talked about last week did not have a lot of success in the CFB semifinal.
Okay, before we pick the national championship and we get outside of
totally disregarded me. You're like, we're not even going to go there. We're not talking about Michigan high school basketball and football. Shut up, Craig.
I'm not disregarding you. I'm just being mindful of our guest time. All of our fans who are watching and listening.
Shout out to Fast Chad who's watching.
When you look at if you guys are out there, pop into the comments and say hello. We would love to interact. We'll throw you up on the screen. answer your questions if you have any here in these last 10 to 15 minutes. All right, Craig, talk about the portal. Jonathan did a great job of kind of breaking that down for us. As you look across it, what sticks out to you from the portal as a whole when we look at the scope of the league? One thing that I'll say to kind of set you up here is that you've made a great point over the years of having the acquisition portal, which has been traditionally this window, and then the cut portal, where teams were going to jettison their guys that they didn't have room for
in that tail end, we'll call it.
That later portal window. Now, I think in a correct move and in a helpful move, we only have one portal window. That just creates a little more of a need to have that GM ready to move things around, have that eval team ready to move things around. You got to have real conversations up front with your guys in that year in review kind of meeting to let them know if they need to move on or this, that, or the other. So as we look at this window, this is the first time we've seen it where it's just the one.
Yep.
And I think that it has looked slightly different to me. And we are seeing it become a little bit more wild. Hollywood Smothers really jumps off to me as we get major outlets announcing where guys are going, and we're getting solid reports. Yes. These are not guesses. This young man or his agent called Pete Nakos or Pete Thamel or Matt Zenitz or whoever, and they were given permission to put this out because this is the decision that's going to be made. And they're having to backtrack and create flip graphics because guys are deciding to make other moves.
And is it backtracking, or is it the art of the negotiation?
I'm just talking about from a media standpoint, or having to go back and make a new graphic in terms of backtracking. I don't know that I would say that the players are backtracking. I think that teams and coaches are just going to continue to be relentless. And to Jonathan's point, if you don't get ink to paper, you cannot exhale. And even in some cases, well, after there's ink to paper, I think you need to have butts in seats of class to exhale.
Desmond Jennings would like a word about whether ink to paper, you know. And to me, I think these guys, you know, we saw a couple of flips. Alabama has gotten Mary flipped this to Courtney in Alabama. They had a couple of guys go flip to the Horns. I think it's a leveraging tactic. I know if I'm an agent, I know if I'm a player, and I tell Pete Nakos that I'm going to this school, he's going to put it out there. And then what that's going to do is I'm going to give the other school an opportunity to say, okay, I'm ready to sign here. Give me a reason not to do it. You know, and I think we saw that last Sunday night when we were on the show and you were out portaling. You know, Lane Kiffin and Sam Levitt were at the basketball game at LSU. And all of a sudden, Desmond Jennings talks about, hey, I'm re-entering the portal. He's talking about going to LSU. And it's like, so I see both sides really playing this. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out in the spring, because now these kids can't leave if they're not the number one quarterback. And, you know, I think it's interesting from the standpoint of guys like DJ Lagway, even a Dylan Raiola. I think that they thought, I don't know if DJ or Raiola thought that they would still be in the portal at this point. Maybe they're waiting for Miami. Maybe they're waiting for Oregon. But I sure as hell don't think DJ Lagway thought he was going to be going to Baylor. Thought he was going to be a little bit more higher demand than that. So to me, that's been the interesting thing of everyone wants to go back in the portal, but I think they're finding out their real value and their real worth.
Yeah, and to Jonathan's point, if we look across the teams here in the transfer portal, Texas definitely sticks out as one that has grabbed some big names because they've been able to drop some money. Texas A&M has done the same thing. Texas A&M has grabbed some quality talent across the board in a variety of positions. They were right there this year, Craig. They were right there in the college football playoff. And you got Marcel Reed coming back. Does that mean that they're going to level up next year? I don't know. We've doubted Mike Elko a few too many times around here, and so I feel like it might be time to stop doubting him. But I'm less doubting him as much as I'm doubting the streakiness of Marcel Reed. And until they get somebody in there that's going to be more consistent at the quarterback position, I think they're going to be in the thick of it because they have too much talent not to be. I don't think that we're looking at a backslide to like 7-5. I think they're going to be well within the conversation. They have a ton of talent. They now have confidence because they believe they can get there. But the question for me will be, can Marcel Reed elevate and become more consistently accurate? I think that his analysis of Florida was phenomenal. Another team with a new
coach. Florida got Singleton Jr. too. Needs to come up.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And if we look across some of these teams that are in the first year with a new head coach, you got Florida, you've got Auburn, you've got Kentucky. Obviously, you've got Arkansas. I wouldn't say that I've heard as much of a splash from them. And then you have LSU and Ole Miss in that conversation as well. I'm looking at Florida as making a lot of noise. I'm looking at even Kentucky, Will Stein coming in and not playing around, and especially now with Oregon being out of it, you know he's going to hit the ground full go in Lexington. Pete Golding in the thick of the college football playoff has hosted a lot of top-tier talent. Deuce Knight coming in. We still don't know what's going to happen with Chambliss. I think it's kind of craziness that the NCAA denied that initially. Definitely the appeal is going to go into play. Big question mark.
Is it wild, though? Because, like, here's the thing. It was kind of like ex post facto. It was only after the fact that the season was over he said he had that respiratory issue. It wasn't because of the respiratory issue that he set out. He just didn't win that. So, like, I'm going to pump the brakes on whether or not, you know, the NCAA was being mean. And here's the thing. I would love to see Trinidad Chambliss come back. But I think it's a little sketchy to see that.
Is Deuce Knight the guy? Can he step in and hold them at that level?
Deuce Knight has been trending to Ole Miss since the season was over, following the Ole Miss recruiting folks, kind of getting there. He's been following a lot. If you looked at his Instagram and socials, no, I am not creeping on Deuce Knight's Instagram and socials. Other journalists are doing that for me and posting that out there. I think it's probably going to be Deuce Knight's show to definitely win if Trinidad is going to be gone. Obviously a very talented young man. But I think what I'm hearing from you is why we talk about why the SEC is still so strong is the depth. Now we have Kentucky entering the chat, hosting Sam Levitt, putting that money in the portal. Once again, it's making it where Kentucky now is not going to be a doormat, but it's going to be, again, a little bit of a pain. And even shout out to our guy, Ryan. He's going to be excited because Jeff Levy is also getting his act together and also getting it on the portal. So,
Shout out to Kamario Taylor not having a major injury in that bowl game against Wake Forest there at the end. I thought that for sure something was shredded or broken. It was a horrific-looking injury. No tears, no breaks. And there will be all gas and no brakes with Kamario Taylor in Starkville heading into 2026.
Yeah, no shout out to the Duke's Mayo Bowl for not letting Ryan bring his cowbell.
All right, Craig, we've talked a little about this portal madness. We're going to continue to see names move. I don't think there's any real – people are going to want us to sit here and tip things off in terms of, hey, we've heard this guy's going here, that guy's going there. But Jonathan just said it, like, and I just said it. As much as we would like to think this and would aspire to get to this level, we're not Pete Nakos and we're not Matt Zenitz and we're not Pete Thamel or any of those guys. And so I'm definitely not about to put my name on something when we know that it is as fluid gets.
Yep.
And so we're just going to hold off and see how things settle down. We'll break it down after they land where they land. Go ahead.
One thing I'm interested to see with the transfer portal, guys who don't necessarily sign, and if they don't, you know, they don't pull their name out of the transfer portal, they're still allowed to go no matter what. So, like, will their school allow them to start spring camp if they're still in the portal? Or are they going to be totally, you know, like, out of school and out of class and stuff like that? I think that's going to be something interesting to watch, where we might still have some back-end movement post spring classes.
What – let's look at – I agree. And again, that's a big calendar discussion. Mm-hmm. And it's going to continue to be a point of contention as inevitably we're going to have to pull this thing back in terms of the calendar. We're going to have to pull back the games into December. The portal's going to have to shift and move a little bit, because if indeed the college football playoffs goes to 16 teams, then the format is going to be necessary to add an extra week, and they can't continue to push deeper into January. That's just not a thing. That's not going to work. And so as they look to rectify some of those problems, I think this portal has potential to shift backwards a little bit and maybe impact that academic calendar you're talking about.
For sure.
A little bit as well. All right. One more thing before we get out of here, and a nod to the last word, if you will. This is not an SEC topic anymore, but who's going to win the national championship, Craig? Are you going with Indiana or are you going with Miami? I would bet my entirety of possessions, net worth, and everything that I have that I know this answer. But go ahead and let us know.
Never daunted, Kirk Cignetti in Indiana win the national championship. Carson Beck does not.
I actually agree with you. I love the speed of Miami's defense, yep. And I think that it will have an impact here in this game. We saw what the speed and athleticism of Ohio State's defense did and created a low-scoring Big Ten championship game. I also think that Miami has playmakers on the offensive side of the ball. I think that Mark Fletcher can run the ball, and with Miami's offensive line, they're able to move the ball against a lot of people. Question that you brought up multiple times that I still sit here with is, will Shannon Dawson commit to the run? Can we get a solid 50-50 split, or are we going to chunk that thing around? And in spite of those things, I just think that the intelligence and the confidence and the consistency of Fernando Mendoza and this relatively unassuming lineup for Indiana, you know, if I asked somebody on the street or even somebody in a college football bar who was there to watch the game to name three players off of Indiana's roster, I'm not sure they'd be able to do it. If I asked the same question about Miami's roster, I would put the odds a little bit higher, simply because Malachi Toney and Fletcher and Carson Beck have made quite the splash this year. And then we haven't even touched the defensive side of the ball with guys that are going to be littered across the NFL draft for Miami. But Indiana is mature. They're confident. They play as a team. And I'm excited to see what this game looks like. I am pulling for a competitive game. Not that garbage that we saw the other night.
No.
I want to see something that is competitive, because a good game is what we know and what we love as college football fans. And so that's what we're looking for. This has been SEC Sunday Night. We're both rolling with the Hoosiers. We'll see you next time.